Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you as usual. And yes, the midterm elections are not for well over a year from now. However, polling is already happening in some of these states. We know that Republicans are looking very good for pickups in West Virginia and South Dakota, and there are certainly several other possibilities out there as well. Montana's one, and then two in the South, one in Arkansas, one in Louisiana. Louisiana is where we'll camp out briefly today, and that's because a new poll from Harper and Conservative Intel shows that Congressman Bill Cassidy is ahead of two-term Democrat Mary Landrieu, 47-45. That's obviously within any sort of margin of error. But Landrieu's approval rating is also at 45%, with 41% negative, and most people still have no idea who Bill Cassidy is. He would need to win a primary to get to that matchup. But, Jim, if you're looking for good numbers, well in advance of a tough challenge against a sitting U.S. senator who has great name recognition and has a great family history in the state, you can't ask for much more than that if you're Bill Cassidy.
Nothing in this poll is enormously stunning or surprising. But it does tell us that, look, Mary Landrieu is not in great shape. Louisiana is a state that has been drifting right pretty steadily, year by year, cycle by cycle. And, you know, any red state Democrat is going to be in trouble in a normal set of circumstances. The smaller off-year turnout should be better. And also, you look in that poll, Obama's disapproval rating is somewhere in the 60s. So you add all of that up, that's actually a pretty good outlook for Republicans. Kind of surprising in there. One of my all-time favorites, Bobby Jindal, is a relatively high disapproval rating. He has not had the success getting his legislative agenda through in his second term that he had in the first term. Maybe spending this weekend live tweeting his fantasy football draft will turn those numbers around, make them like them again. So this basically tells us Republicans have a good pickup opportunity in Louisiana. And obviously Landrieu will be doing everything humanly possible to distance herself from Obama and insisting that, oh, she's nothing like them. But she did vote for his gun control initiative a couple months ago. She's, you know, pro-Obamacare and pretty loyal vote whenever the Democrats really need her. That should be a fairly easy argument for any Republican to make in a state like Louisiana.
Quick question on Jindal and the fantasy draft. If you're the governor of Louisiana and you're live tweeting your fantasy draft, do you pretty much have to take all Saints?
He had a few of them, not all, by the way, which I think was kind of very revealing. I think that maybe that'll hurt him a little bit. But yeah, you know, considering the obsession, he managed to pick some LSU players somehow. Kind of surprised me, but he'll be starting some college players on his. Actually, it'd be kind of neat if you could actually do a fantasy team that had both college and pro players. But anyway,
that would be very good. And actually, LSU will probably have the better defense, so you might want to take them if they're still available. All righty, on to the bad martini now. And Huma Abedin's got enough of her own problems just in her own house. As you know, her husband is refusing to drop out of the New York City mayoral race despite his numbers totally going in the tank. But the New York Times reporting on Sunday about the ongoing controversy over Abedin, who, of course, was a longtime top advisor to Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, while she was still working for Hillary Clinton, also working for private sector clients. There's been inquiries into the State Department, Jim, about the appropriateness of this, and the fact that the State Department refuses to answer this raises even more questions, and especially at a time when Hillary Clinton seems to be thinking about ramping up a presidential campaign insanely early here. What do you make of all this?
Huma Abedin is someone who has always had this remarkable press coverage. Occasionally, sometimes the hyperbole goes so far as saying Huma Abedin is the other daughter that the Clintons never had. And you always got to wonder how Chelsea Clinton feels about that comparison. But so, you know, she's known as, you know, Hillary's right-hand woman and obviously the wife of Anthony Weiner. She's been a subject of quite a few public profiles. And Dave Weigel of Slate looked through all of them and kind of said, you know, almost all of these profiles mention how important she is to Hillary, you know, that she's a very trusted aide. They mentioned that she's a very attractive woman and she dresses very stylishly and all this kind of superficial stuff. But he raised the question of like, so what has she actually done? You know, what makes her such a standout person who's gotten these profiles in magazine after magazine? And there really wasn't much listed in these articles. It's very kind of superficial, this critique, this assessment of her as one of the most important, you know, staffers in Washington and such. Now we find out that she's been working for private sector clients while at the same time she's working for State Department, which I had thought was just verboten, just blanket. If you're working for the U.S. government, you're not supposed to be working for other folks on the side, particularly, you know, places that might have business before the U.S. government, so to avoid a conflict of interest. But I guess you can be granted an exemption to this, and Huma Abedin has been operating under an exemption for this for a while. Now, the next thing which is curious about this story is that the State Department isn't answering many questions about that, and they won't even answer what role, if any, Hillary had in these sorts of things. Now, if I'm Hillary Clinton, and my right-hand woman has secretly been working for private sector clients on the side, I'm very upset about that. So Hillary, at the very least, had to know about this. What are you working over there? Nothing. Abedin certainly would clear her private sector work with her boss. So then the next question is, why did Hillary think this was appropriate? Did she vet any of these clients for having any business before either the State Department or some other part of the federal government? Look, if you are seen as somebody who's close to a person who may be a future president of the United States, as Hillary wants everyone to think of her these days, people want to hire you. People want to be your friend. They want to start giving you gifts as if you're, say, the governor of Virginia or something. And so you end up having all these kind of hangers on and this sudden sense of nothing is ever explicit corruption. There's never I'm going to hire Huma. And, in 2017, the Hillary Clinton administration will give a big contract to my company. But it definitely is this schmoozing. It definitely is this establishing connections and stuff. The rather traditional rule that if you're working for the government, you don't work for the private sector on the side. If you're going to have an exemption for that, boy, I hope you have a very good reason for that kind of an exemption. And it's not really clear on this. And the State Department clamming up and refusing to say anything about this is, generally it means that, I'm going to guess that there's something there. There's, one of the guaranteed rules of politics is if there's a reasonable explanation, it'll come out fast. Nobody withholds a reasonable explanation for what's going on, which makes us think that maybe there was some special deals going on or something that is going to emit an odor for the Secretary of State's, top assistant to be working for private sector clients.
Yeah, a couple of thoughts here. As questionable as some of the tactics of Victoria Nuland were, getting answers out of Jen Psaki at the State Department is almost impossible. And that's what happens when you put a strictly political person at a diplomatic outlet. That was just a terrible, terrible decision. Secondly, Jim, I assume the official response is going to be, at this point, what difference does it make?
Ah, very good. Very good. That's a slogan that applies for everything, doesn't it?
She's not there anymore. Let's move on. Why do we have
not
to keep
for
going
our times.
Back?
The, it's not the era of good feelings. It's the era of irrelevant consequences.
We're trying to move forward. Okay, on to martini
focus
number...
on our corruption of our past. Let us focus on our corruption of our future.
Yes. On to martini number three now. And Twitter was all a Twitter over the weekend thanks to a post from Michael Grunwald of Time magazine, not to be confused with Glenn Greenwald of The Guardian, who made headlines of his own over the weekend. What happened is we're not really sure why he tweeted this at the time that he did, but Michael Grunwald, an editor at Time magazine, I can't wait to write a defense of the drone strike that takes out Julian Assange. And of course, he got an entire Twitter backlash. He eventually deleted it. Then he said it was stupid. I deserve the backlash except for the anti-Semitic comments. I'm not sure where those came from. But Jim, I don't think anybody, at least not in this conversation, has anything good to say about Julian Assange. But random drone strikes, I don't know if Grunwald was drinking that night or what was going on, but odd random tweet.
It would explain a little bit, wouldn't it? Because I'm no particular fan of Julian Assange. I also think we can blame him for inspiring the villain of the last Bond movie, played by Javier Bardem, very overrated, clearly trying to rip off the Joker from the previous Batman movie. It was a terrible mistake. Nefarious hackers very rarely make good movie villains. So Julian Assange, that one's on you. But, for this and all of his other activities of WikiLeaks, I don't think he deserves to be drone strike killed over it. The whole idea of the drone strikes was that they were going to be used only to kill people who were really unique set of circumstances, like Al-Waqi, where we don't have military forces in the area. We can't send in the local authorities can't reach them. There's no way to obtain these people, and we don't want to risk our lives, so we'll take them out with a drone strike. And generally, it's supposed to be reserved for like Al Qaeda, fairly indisputably bad guys. Now, I'm Julian Assange is strikes me as a guy who's extraordinarily reckless in his willingness to reveal classified information. I think you can argue that Assange certainly endangered people, and he may have actually ended up getting some, people who are working with our intelligence agencies killed. Assange is a bad guy, but there is this kind of cavalier, hey, let's drone this guy attitude that just doesn't, it's just out of bizarre out of Grunwald. Again, you say one of those things where I almost kind of wondering if they're, It would make more sense if he'd said like Justin Bieber or something, or somebody who really like, you know, oh, the Kardashians, I hate them. I can't wait to drone strike them or something. But you know, it suggests, presuming that he was not blotto drunk at the time, that he actually really has thought about this, that at some day Julian Assange walking out of the – which country's embassy is he hanging around in right now?
I want to say Ecuador.
All right, you know, he comes out of the Ecuadorian embassy to get a, you know, empanada or something. And all of a sudden, you know, a missile comes out of the sky. There's a smoking crater left where Julian Assange used to be. And Grunwald is just at his keyboard ready to say, here's why this was hunky-dory. And it's just a bizarre set of circumstances, a bizarre set of – and so – you know, Grunwald's getting a decent amount of, I think, deserved flack for kind of suggesting that he can't wait to write the piece defending the U.S. government killing somebody. It certainly is not a violent threat to America. You could argue that maybe he's an intelligence leak. But if these kinds of messages are going around in the U.S. in the media, and I think you can safely say the establishment media, media that is, you know, very closely connected to this administration, boy, all of a sudden Snowden's reluctance to come home makes a little more sense, doesn't it, Craig? The press is saying, drone him, you know, we're kind of, you know, they've become a, you know, a gladiatorial audience or something like that. So it's a bizarre, you know, complaint coming from them. Maybe it's just a solitary brain fart on the part of a Time correspondent, or maybe it does kind of suggest that our media has become very, very comfortable with A, the Obama administration in a way that they never were with the Bush administration, B, very comfortable with the concept of state-sponsored murder without a trial. This is not the traditional electric chair or lethal injection or something. And then C, you know, like I'm not a big fan of Assange and Snowden and all these guys, but not, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean you want to see him killed through extrajudicial means. And it's kind of this rather cavalier attitude that perhaps is spreading in some corners of the media world. There is a certain argument that people who are, you know, needing to goose their traffic a little bit will say something really deliberately provocative just to set off the controversy. So at some point, you're just kind of wondering, you know, all right, who's I mentioned Bieber. Who else would be an appropriately, you know, universally despised figure? Because like, if you'd said that guy in Ohio who was keeping the girls prisoner, if you'd said, I can't wait for the drone strike on that guy, nobody would complain. So you need somebody who's really divisive, somebody like how about Ryan Braun?
I was going to say A-Rod, so we're on the same page.
Okay, yeah. So if you, I can't wait to write the piece defending the drone strike on A-Rod, a whole bunch of people will say, attaboy, yeah, let's get him. And other people will say, oh, how dare you, you know. Coming soon to a Twitter feed near you.
Yes, it will be Jim and I explaining that we weren't serious about droning Ryan Braun or A-Rod.
Well, like, you might not have been serious.
Oh, very good. Very good. Well, Jim, fascinating start to the week. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please be sure to join us again on Tuesday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.